Hello and welcome to the Everything BDSM podcast. I'm your host, Rope Tiger Daddy. This is episode number 10. And today we're going to talk a little bit about how to get started in rope bondage and shibari. So, it's funny, all these topics I have a book on. Of course, I have 16 books total. So, of course, I'm going to have a book on most of these topics. I put together what I consider to be a pretty good rope bondage starter book. It's on Amazon, again, under the pseudonym J.E. Earl. Highly recommend you, if you're interested, you check that out. I know I've talked to some people that have bought it and read it, bought it for boyfriends, girlfriends, partners, etc., and felt like it was a good reference, for at least for starting out and beginning in rope bondage. So check that out. So people ask me, it's probably maybe one of the most asked questions I get. How did you get started in rope bondage? Like, it's very much tied up for me with how I got started in kink. So like when I've been kinky like all my life, like people say that you just don't get a chance to practice it very often, or you don't feel like that society is going to accept it, that your partner's going to accept it, things like that. When I first was like, you know what, fuck this, I'm kinky, I'm into DS, I want to do this stuff. One of the very first things physically like that I looked up was not sadism. It was actually rope bondage. I knew I was a rigger from basically the beginning. For me, growing up in the early 80s, 90s, like we watched the Wonder Woman series with Linda Carter on TV. It was reruns basically at that time because I think it came out maybe the year or two before I was born. But that came on and she was always getting tied up. And it was like, you watch it and you're like, why as a kid is this intriguing me? So, you know, I kind of knew I was into it from a very long time ago. But again, like it's like one of those things, like especially before the internet and before social media and like stuff, you could find stuff easier on the internet. It's hard to practice these kinks. People don't understand, younger people, what having the internet and the internet growing meant for kink and just self-discovery and things like that. It was a very big deal. You know, I got on the internet when I was 19 or so, 1998, 99, something like that. So it was very, you get on AOL Messenger and Internet Explorer, like you don't think I'm gonna look up kink. Hell, I was 19. I didn't even know what kink was at the time. But, you know, later in life you find these things. And the first physical kink that I knew I was into, I knew I was into DS. I consider that more a mental, emotional kink. There's physical aspects to it, but the first physical kink wasn't sadism. Like I was interested in sadism. Like I knew I was going to have at least a passing fancy for it. I didn't know how deep it was going to go for me, and it went pretty deep. But rope bondage, I knew 100%. That was me. That's who I am. So that was a little bit over a decade ago, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years, something like that, to tell you how far that's evolved. I'm literally recording right now in, it's messy as hell, but I'm literally recording right now in my rope studio. When I added onto my house, I said, look, I need a space to do kink and rope in. And this is like my little oasis. It's a, you know, very Japanese inspired design room. Obviously shibari has Japanese roots. So there's a suspension beam above me that's built into the wall. I actually built it. A lot of the stuff in here I built. Pretty much finished the entire room except for the drywall, which I do not like doing drywall. I'm sure everyone out there can identify with that. But everything else in the room, designed, done, built by me, the flooring, everything. So that's my dedication to rope. So do I feel like I'm a good person to tell people how to get started? Yeah, I mean, I had to like learn myself. Like I saw one of my friends on FetLife, a guy named Jesse Flanagan, who does fantastic work in shibari. He put a status on FetLife the other day, and he's like, people ask him, where did you learn rope? He compared it to conversation. Like, how did you learn to have a conversation? Like, I just learned it. I picked it up in various places. For me, I can kind of point to some of the sources. For me, Twisted Monk's YouTube channel was a big resource. There's a lot of different YouTube channels that will show you things, and they call them different things. And we're going to get into a little bit of the naming conventions and the what I call Japanese quote-unquote snobbery. It's not really Japanese people. It's American people mostly who have this snobbery where they use Japanese words and they think they're somehow above everyone else. But we're going to talk about that in just a minute. As far as sources go, Twisted Monk's YouTube channel is a good one. I ended up buying my first rope from him. Now I process a lot of rope. In fact, when I get a new partner, a new rope bunny, or a new submissive, they get their own rope. It's like a initiation thing. Like I make the collars, I make the rope. So the rope that I usually use is hemp, and I process it. In the past, I've steered people away from unnatural fibers. I'm a traditionalist. And this may be some of my quote unquote Japanese snobbery. I just like the natural fibers. I'm a nature person. It just makes sense to me. However, some of the nylon suppliers have gotten so good. And nylon as a rope, and I'm jumping around all over the place, but nylon as a rope has gotten way, way better, and it's safer. We'll talk about that in just a minute. So I knew I was into rope from basically the start of kink. The question is with people starting out is, who are you going to tie, where are you going to get your equipment, and where are you going to learn? And I touched on a few of those things. So I think the first thing everyone jumps into that we just kind of jumped around and talked about a little bit is where am I going to get rope at? Where's the rope? Like for me starting out, I didn't know where to get rope. I knew about pervertibles. I knew about, a lot of things like that. I'm a habitual Lowe's shopper, being a middle-aged man. Obviously, I like to shop at Lowe's, and, there's a lot of pervertible aisles at Lowe's. So I knew I could go to Lowe's and get cotton rope. And the cotton rope wasn't the best stuff in the world, and it wasn't the worst stuff in the world. It was helpful for my journey. So like, if you're just wanting to get started right now, anybody that's listening to this can go to Lowe's and buy, a couple cotton ropes. Sometimes they sell this as, what am I thinking of? Like when you hang clothes up to dry, the clothesline, they sell it as clothesline. I don't recommend that type. I recommend a little bit of the thicker stuff that's going to be closer to what you use for, when you actually get into rope and rope. But if you don't know you're going to be into rope, you don't want to spend $100 or $20 or $30 or $40 or $50 or what the hell ever dropping money on rope. You don't know you're going to be into it. So the easiest thing is to go to Lowe's, spend $5 or $10, get you a couple hanks of cotton, try it out. My dumbass started with paracord because I had that in the house, and it works. It's just really shitty. There's a reason why you use thicker diameter rope. And paracord's not thicker diameter rope. It's very thin. It tends to cut off arteries and nerves a little bit quicker. You don't want to use paracord. My dumbass started with paracord. I had no clue. I wasn't on FetLife at the time. I couldn't, go like, what kind of rope do I use? I had no idea. So I used paracord, and it worked for a couple times to at least tell me that I was into this and that I could make it work. Graduated up to the cotton rope from Lowe's, and I tell people this story. It's kind of funny. My partner at the time, my wife, who I was married to for 16 years and got divorced about 10 ago, She wasn't really into kink. We'll just leave it at that. She had a passing fancy for it. There were certain things that made her happy in it. But for the most part, she wasn't a submissive. She wasn't into kink. She didn't like it. She wasn't really happy I was into it. So I would take my cotton rope. I'd put it in my truck. I'd go to work. Lunchtime came. I would scarf down a sandwich or something in my truck really quick. I'd pull out the cotton rope and I'd just start tying. And, it wasn't... It's not easy because try to do a double column tie on your hand or a single column tie on your hand. You can't do that. Like you need two hands to do that. So there's always a foot, there's always a leg, there's always you can get a piece of wood, tie against a piece of wood. One thing that I learned when I was in the SCA, I like to sword fight, but you can't have someone there with you to armor up and sword fight with all the time. It's a big deal to get armored up and sword fight with someone. That's why we did them like once a week and that was it. But, you could have what they called a pawl. It was like a dummy, like a stick. You see people, use these in movies and things like that, kung fu movies and stuff. There's just wooden sticks with things sticking out. I'd use a tire and whack at it with a wooden sword. So There's various things you can use. Like, you know, you like I tell people when they're learning how to whip, you know, hang a cloth up, like a towel or something, and whip the towel. Don't whip a person the first time. So, you know, my dumbass the first time used paracord on a person, and that, you know, my ex-wife now was my wife at the time, which went okay. It didn't, there was no adverse circumstances, but it could have been bad if I'd kept using paracord. My point, it's not the appropriate rope to use. So I would tie myself at lunch and I would just tie up, like, Lord, if anyone had walked up on my truck to talk to me and I'm like, my legs are all tied together. I mean, it would have been funny, but dominance in particular and riggers, like they shit on self tying. We'll get into that in just a minute. I'm an avid self-tier. I love self-tying. I love taking photos of myself self-tied. Would I let someone else tie me? Absolutely not. That's not to shit on rope bottoms or anything like that. I'm not a rope bottom. So like when I'm tying myself, I look at it as I'm tying an object, not I'm bottoming to myself. I'm topping myself more than anything. So the people do look down upon that. And you know, when I've taken the photos and posted them on FetLife and places like that, I get, Lord knows, so many female doms, male doms, like, hey, I want to tie you. Like, no, I don't let other people tie me. This is me. This is me practicing. And I think it helps to practice self-tying because you get an understanding of what the rope bottom feels. Like, I did self-suspension and I'm like, you know, I'm a pretty big dude. I'm not what I would consider chubby, but you know, I'm long. And I weigh close to 200 pounds. And when I self-suspended, I was like, oh my God, this is such pain. Like, I get how people sink into the pain, but you know, for someone who doesn't like it and only likes inflicting pain, that was like a big eye-opening experience for me. So I keep jumping all over the place. Back to getting rope. So cotton rope is, you know, if you don't know you're going to be into it, you get cotton rope. Me, as I mentioned, I'm a traditionalist. I like hemp rope. I like jute rope. I like hemp way more than jute. Just for some reason, jute has this crunchy, like feel to it. Like, it just kind of like, it's a textural thing. Like, hemp is usually pretty soft. It holds knots. It whips well. Jute tends to stand up a little bit more on its own, especially if it's not broken in very well. But I have jute, I have hemp. I'm more of a hemp traditionalist. I just like it. I don't know why. 6 millimeter, 8 millimeter is always the choice for the diameter of the rope. I started out with 8. I like 8 for certain applications, especially if you're tying someone who is not super skinny or not super petite. Using 8 millimeter hemp is a little bit better because it tends to, I feel like it is aesthetically a little bit better. It accentuates things a little bit better, but also it's just, if you're suspending or putting somebody under pressure, when you spread pressure across 8 millimeters, it's a little bit different than spreading it across 6. And I know rope tends to be round, but it tends to flatten out a little bit. So you're not hitting just that one very specific spot. You're spreading the force out over a bigger spot. So especially if you're tying someone who has trouble with suspension and you're suspending, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, not getting ahead of ourselves again, you might want to use a bigger diameter rope. Like, have I ever used 10? No, I don't. I've never had 10. I've never used 10. 8's about as high as I would go, somewhere between 8 and 6. I have a lot of 6, but also I have 8. You never know what the person you're going to be tying can, you know, stand and bear and things like that. So again, I talked about how I'm kind of a traditionalist here lately. Nylon has been very hot. And if you're interested in nylon, by the way, his rope is very reasonable and extremely well made, extremely well colored. Check out my friend Chromanauts. You can look him up on Google, Chromaknotz. So he makes a lot of nylon, a lot of good nylon in some vivid colors. That's one thing you can't really get with hemp. And jute is, you don't get these vivid colors. You're trying to dye it. It either takes the dye or it doesn't take the dye. Like, I've dyed hemp before and pulled it out. It's like, you know, it was vivid until you washed it and it wasn't vivid anymore. Like, all the dye just never set. So I process a lot. It's tricky to get the dye to take in natural fibers. You just don't know. So, I'm high on the nylon now. Do I tie with it a lot? No, I still don't tie with it a lot, but especially for the prettier stuff, especially for, you know, stuff where you need a weight rating, nylon's a little bit better. So, sorry. One caveat I have to make is that I do use for uplines what's called HempX. It is a synthetic rope that looks like hemp. It feels like hemp. Everything but smells like hemp. And hemp has a very specific smell, which I do enjoy also. And so do my partners. But HempX is nylon, I believe, or it's a synthetic type of rope. It may not be nylon, but it's rated. So when you do an upline with synthetic rope, you have some more assurance that the rope's going to hold than with natural fibers. Like, there's something people don't understand about destructive testing. When you destructively test something, you destroy it. When you weight load it to a certain rating, you destroy some of its integrity. When you make rope with a process that has measured and you can get consistency with it and the process is stable, then that makes you more certain. So the synthetic fibers can be weight rated. I don't know if chromonauts are or not. You guys would have to ask him, or I'll ask him. But the HempX stuff is. It's rated. So you can buy it knowing that you know over time, obviously it's going to degrade, but you know that you can suspend people with it, and at least at the initial time, you're going to get that weight rating out of it. So that, you know, people ask me what you need for rope. That's the basics. You just need a little bit of rope. There's other places to get it. Twisted Monk is pretty good still. He makes really good rope. There's Minawashi on Etsy if you're interested in jute. But there's a lot of different rope sources. You just have to pick the ones you want, the colors you want, the qualities you want, things like that. Some of these are pretty cheap. You can kind of play around, you know, buy a Hank, figure out that's something that you enjoy, that you like, compare it against others, and then decide what type is best for you. People try to get too into this. They well, what about carabiners? Like, dude, like, that's the next thing we're going to get into after we talk about learning is suspending. Like, everybody wants to run to suspension. It's not a goal. We'll talk about that in a minute. So all you need to get started is a little bit of rope. A partner even is optional if you have places to tie, or yourself, your legs, a quote-unquote pawl to tie. You're good. That's all you need to start learning. People try to jump ahead. Like, they want a partner, and they want, like, a partner's good. A partner can give you feedback, but you don't need to run into a partner so quick. You need to learn. People don't take the time to learn. Or, you know, I take that back a little bit. You know, having a partner that you can tie on that's on your side, that's ride or die. You know, they can help you advance your tying, advance your learning. But a lot of people will go and they look for just a generic rope bunny. That to me is not a good idea at first. You need to do learning first. Or if you have a partner who's willing to help you learn with them instead of trying to learn with a new partner or on a new partner who, you know, you may not have the best communication with or the best, you know, rapport with quite yet. So we talked a little bit about learning, about sources of learning. There's a ton of YouTube channels. There's a ton of people on FetLife. Two things I recommend is there's a guy named Topologist on FetLife who has a web series called Crash Restraint, I think. I'm going to try to leave show notes if I can remember these things. But he has just individual videos on specific ties. Very helpful. It tells you some of the dangers of these ties and, you know, some of the things that you need to look out for. A lot of them are more advanced, so you have to take that into account. There's a website called Rope 365. They go from basics, including, you know, materials, partner selection, things like that. Great website, especially if you can't pick up videos as quick and you want show me pictures of the steps. I love that kind of stuff. I love when people show me pictures of the steps. When they show me pictures of the steps and then I match that with a video, bam, I can learn just about anything. So really good website. And then also shibaristudy.com. They're subscription-based. I think they have some free videos, but they're subscription-based. I paid for the subscription for at least 6 months and kind of just tried to digest what I could on there as quickly as I could. Actually, very good site, very well done. Teachers are good. They explain the things they're doing. They show you, unique and innovative ties. Just an all-around good website, one I highly recommend. So the one thing you have to watch out for with Shibari teachers is what I called earlier this Japanese snobbery. Not everyone has it, and but some people have it. Some people have it in small degrees. Some people have it in large degrees. we're in, obviously, if you're English and you have, you know, English, Caucasian, whatever, and you have no Japanese heritage, there's a discussion about cultural appropriation. It gets into some weird places at times, and I don't, you know, I'm very versed in Japanese culture. I've been to Japan. I've worked with Japanese people. I have Japanese friends. You know, it's something that I respect the Japanese culture. One of the things is the rope bondage. Like, I want to learn what the Japanese were thinking when, you know, they developed this. You know, obviously it was used not always to tie pretty women or pretty men up. It was used in, you know, warfare to honor prisoners and things like that. So, you know, knowing the cultural heritage of things and taking them over is two different things. So there's a lot of this kind of thing going on here in the U.S. And it's a little ick, I won't lie. But what's ickier to me is when people try to use that Japanese stuff. You know, just because you know a few Japanese words, don't try to fuck with people. Like, teach them what the words mean. But we get so into this, well, every Thai has to have a Japanese name. Not every Thai has a Japanese name. You know, people will look at a Thai, well, what's that called? It's a double column with this, you know, added onto it. Well, what's the Japanese name? Dude, it's like, there's no Japanese name for some of these Thais. Like, there's tying in the Japanese traditional sense, which for me, you know, there's a Western and a Eastern style of tying. I tend to lean towards the more Eastern style. You know, the rope is doubled and, you know, the end is the doubled over end is the bite. You kind of start tying from that and go outward from there. You know, some of the Western styles, you know, they kind of diverge off. The ropes break in two, you know, you're using one rope over here and one rope over here. It's fine, whatever style you want to choose. It doesn't really matter. It's when you choose a certain style and you start putting more weight behind it. And, you know, some of these, more often than not, it's white males who do this, have this tendency to just kind of culturally appropriate the thing and then lord it over everyone else. I know Japanese words too. I don't start using Japanese words in the middle of a damn conversation with an English-speaking person because why? It's pretentious and asshole-ish. So if you're learning and someone starts pulling out Japanese words on you and they start lording them over you, I mean, my advice is just to walk the fuck away because people who do that are dicks. Bottom line. Like, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Now, if someone's like, hey, this is, in, you know, the Japanese would call this this, or the Japanese word for this is this, that's fine. But when someone says, do you even know what the Japanese word is for this? Walk away. Seriously. It's some nonsense stuff when I hear people say that. It just has no place. You know, we're trying to be at least a little bit inclusive. You know, you want to teach people the safe stuff. So if you want to teach them safe things, why are you trying to make things inaccessible to them? They're going to end up hurting someone, or they're going to end up learning from someone they shouldn't. So that's my take on that. So a lot of good sources for learning it. Partner selection, again, is very crucial. We talked about this a little bit. But you want a partner who can give you feedback. A lot of people believe with bottoming that it's a very passive thing. For me, I don't believe in passive bottoms. I want someone who at least initially, you know, after we tied the same tie four times, I don't need feedback then. You know, if obviously something's gone wrong, please tell me. But, you know, the first time you tie someone, the first time you do a new tie, like even with my very first partner who I've been with for 9 years, if I do a new tie, I'm going to tell them, hey, this is a new tie. Like, let me know how this feels. Like, let me know how this works. And, you know, afterwards, you know, if she gets in suspension and she comes down quick or stays up for what I think is a long time, I will ask her, like, what made that sustainable or what made that unsustainable? You know, where was it pinching? And it's okay to ask these questions. Even if you're dominant, you should be able to take feedback and not, you know, be like pissed off about it, you know, be a weenie about it. Like, if someone's telling you something hurts, would you rather take them down, give yourself and them a good experience, or would you rather keep them up? So I talked a little bit about suspension. Obviously, it's not something I recommend for beginners. People have this, like, I want to suspend, and it's a goal. I'm going to break all your preconceived notions about suspension, okay? One, suspension is freaking hard. It's not something you can just pick up and do on a Saturday afternoon on a whim. It's hard. You have to plan it out. It's physically hard. I don't care if you're lifting a 95-pound woman or a 300-pound man. It's hard. it takes never am I suspending where I'm like, whew, I'm cool and not sweating at all. Like, it's tough. It takes physical fitness. It takes a lot of mental aptitude. It takes a lot of concentration. There's times I suspend where I don't think I'm breathing very much. Like, I hold my breath because I'm so focused on the suspension part of it and doing it safely. That's another thing. Suspension's not the safest thing. People talk about, you know, edge playing. We always bring rope up. Is suspension going to kill someone? It's way safer than, say, something like breath play. But it's still dangerous. Your likelihood of killing someone's not very high, but your likelihood of hurting someone or causing nerve injury is pretty damn high. People take too many unnecessary risks. For me, like, and this is one thing that people, if you don't slow down and you use suspension as a goal, people want to do TK ties, box ties, and suspension. And that's like the ultimate pinnacle. If I can just tie someone in a box tie and suspend them by that, you know, I've hit the mother load. I'm an expert. Bullshit. In fact, I don't, you know, there's people who do that and that's in their risk profile. And that's fine. But I don't look at those people as experts. I look at those people as being a little bit riskier than I would like. And that's, again, they can do that. I'm not judging them, but it's not a standard of professionalism or excellence that you can do that. It's a, I guess, more of a standard of being riskier. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's not a good thing. It just depends on how you look at it. But it's a risk that a lot of us don't think is necessary. There's many other ties you can tie someone in and suspend them from. A TK is not the ultimate tie to suspend someone from. But people have this goal of, I want to get to suspension. I want to get to TK suspensions. I want to get to this. If your thing is to get in a rope bondage for adulation, or to hit a goal, or to impress people, or whatever, I don't think it's the right reasons. It might be right for you, it might be right for some people. For me, it's not the right reason. It's unnecessary. And I'm going to talk in a couple episodes about kink and sex, and this is a sore subject with me. A lot of people do get into rope so they have more availability of partners. It's a known thing. If you're not, a lot of people have the desire and the dedication and the commitment and the stubbornness to do rope and keep doing it. I myself have taught people rope and they think, well, it's cool. I'm going to get in here. He's going to teach me, you know, four or five things and I'll have everything I need. And those people usually end up not using it. They usually end up dropping it. I'm a hard teacher because I don't, you know, I'm not going to, like, some people will teach you to do a TK suspension first time. Or a TK to beginners. Why? It makes no freaking sense. It's just one of those things that, like, is unnecessary risk. So people, you know, get with me and they're like, we're going to, you know, I'll make you tie a single column and a double column 50 times until I know you can tie it without me. Until the next time you come back, can you still tie it? Okay, then we're going to start over. We're going to do that again until you learn how to tie that. So it's just unnecessary risk sometimes people take. It's not worthwhile. But back to my subject, people want to do rope because they feel like it's going to get them more partners. If you do rope, you're flashy. And, you know, there's a lot of stigma behind riggers right now, like, because a lot of the consent violations happen with rigging. And it's obviously because, like, it's a complicated thing. You get sunk into it, but people don't communicate well. And some of these riggers are just not good people, and that happens, you know. But there's a stigma that every rigger is just waiting to rape someone. Every rigger is just waiting to violate consent. Every rigger is just, you know, using this for sex. And I fall into the last one a little bit. I'm not using it for sex, but for me, rope is inherently sexual. If sex and sex related adjacent things aren't happening, I don't want to do rope. And that's okay. I have the ability to tell people I don't want to do rope with them if they look at me and they go, ooh, icky, I don't want to touch you. Like, that's something with consent. We only think consent goes one way. It only goes towards the person who's having things done to them. First of all, I don't want someone who's only having things done to them. I want someone who's an active participant in kink with me and or sex. Secondly, it's just uncomfortable for me to tie someone that doesn't want to be touched by me. And And I'm not, you know, it's one of those things where people just assume that people are trying to violate consent. And, you know, I'll tell people outright, like, my rope is sexual. And they'll say, well, I don't, okay, cool. We don't have to do it. I appreciate it. You know, like, we'd be friends. I appreciate your time. I'm not going to tie you. But people feel like they're entitled to that. Like, riggers have somehow become just these fucking assholes. Like, we just, fucking rig me. Like, when I started going to munches, people would be like, when are you going to tie me? And it was almost like this entitled thing. So people get entitled, like, you know, when are you going to tie me? Well, I don't find you attractive, so I don't want to tie you. You know, maybe you're my friend, I don't find you attractive, and I'll tie you. But, you know, when you tell them, it like, my rope is sexual, they look at you like you have three heads. Like, ooh, like, ugh, like, dude, like, you don't have to tie with everyone. I don't have to tie with you. There's this, like, again, consent goes both ways. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to fucking do it. And if there's nothing that I'm, and people do this too, like, well, if you're not just doing it for the rope, then you're not a real rigger. Well, okay, I do it for the rope, but the rope is sexual to me. So it's like if you ask someone like, hey, can I yank on your dick for 20 minutes, but it's not sexual, so don't try to touch me back. And the person's like, no, I don't want to do that. Well, I should get to yank on your dick because I want to do that. Bullshit. There's this entitlement sense where people have where if you're a rigger, you're supposed to teach the entire community, tie the entire community, you know, be available to tie people, but not get what you need out of the tying. I call bullshit on that. And, you know, again, people are going to put me in a bad box and call me creepy. I don't really give a fuck. Like, I've never not told someone rope is sexual for me. I've tied some people and not done sex with them. But most of the time, that's not a thing for me. I just tell them that that's my rope is sexual. And if they say it's not for them, cool. We don't match. The negotiation failed. That's still a successful negotiation because no one harmed each other. No one miscommunicated. No one did something that someone else didn't want to do. We both either get what we need out of the negotiation or not. I equate this to like people who go into a store and they pick up an item and they say, I can have this for free, right? No, it costs money. Well, I'm just going to walk out and carry it with me. That's stealing. Well, you know, you should let me have it. Like, no, that's an entitlement. That's you for negotiating, then that's entitlement still. It's not the same thing. So it's this weird, icky little thing we get into, and it bugs the hell out of me. But like, you know, a lot of people do tying without sex. And some people will tell you I do tying without sex and then tie people and then try to get them to have sex with them. That's icky as fuck too. It's not something anyone should do. I tell people my tying is sexual. If you don't want to have sex, that's good. I don't want to tie you. And that's my right. And people can say whatever they want to about that. So partner selection obviously is very, very important. There's a lot of miscommunications that can happen in rope. Obviously, we're trying to use Japanese words sometimes to describe simpler shit we could just be doing anyway. But, you know, that's whatever. You can't control people for doing that. All you can do is try to find a good partner who's going to communicate with you and who you can trust. So I know I went through a lot of information in this show, and it's been actually one of the longer shows, which should kind of tell you how much I love rope. So we're just going to leave it at that and close out the show. Again, go slow with rope. It's one of these things that people tend to rush into. It's one of these things people think they're going to learn in a weekend. You can learn some stuff in a weekend, and you can go fast and maybe not hurt anyone, but really it's just not worth it. It's better if you go slow. It's better if you learn the things. It's better if you take your time. Just think about it. People get into this frenzy with rope too, and it happens with everything. Don't get into frenzy. It's bad, okay? So until next time, this is Rope Tiger Daddy signing off.